This is a People First Radio podcast.
Campbell Rivers' Sue Moen wanted to better understand what things are like for those experiencing homelessness in her community. She asked a group of people she knew in that situation if she could join them for a night. They agreed, and Moen took her truck down to spend a night on the streets of Campbell River. She joined me to share reflections from the experience.
My name is Sue Moen. I'm a community frontline worker involved on the Liquita traditional and unceded territories in where we call Campbell River now. I am a privileged colonial settler coming from a middle-class background, and I work and attempt every day to decolonize myself and the work that I do in respect and honor for the peoples who have stewarded these lands and waters for millennia.
And what prompted you to spend a winter night sleeping outside in Campbell River in your truck?
Well, it actually goes back several years. I have been doing nonprofit work for about 35 years, primarily serving equity-seeking populations. And several years ago, I did what we used to call the welfare challenge, which was a challenge to survive on the non-shelter portion of income assistance rates for a single person for a month. And I did that at the time. I think it was, $635 minus $375, whatever that works out to. And that I had to feed myself. I had to be able to, you know, access transportation or services, hygiene, all of those kinds of things. I made it, but just barely. And what I learned was that coming from a place of privilege along all of those pillars of health that have been talked about for 30 years, I came from, as I said, a privileged white middle-class background. I had access to education. I had a home, and so I was able, and some education and experience around food security and other things like that. So I was able to eke out that month, but still noticed how cognitively impaired I was, how tired I was, how unmotivated I was, and it took me some time to recover. Then when I came across this sleep out for one night project from Raising the Roof, again, I looked at it and went, okay, so I serve, you know, what I do for a living and in volunteering is I serve unhoused populations. I know them. I admire them. But except for, you know, some couch surfing in my youth, I have never actually experienced this truly. You know, and one night is in no way a true representation of what many of the folks have to face every single day. But to honor them and to be able to say, I get it a little bit deeper, I chose to approach some of the folks that I know, who I know have been sleeping out primarily outside for years, and ask if I could join them. I wanted to make sure that I was not minimalizing or trivializing or tokenizing their experience. And they welcomed me with open arms. So in the end, I stayed out a night, but I didn't really stay out. I couldn't hack it on the ground. I stayed in my truck.
Can you tell me maybe how the night kind of got started, what it was like rolling up, how you decided where to go, that kind of thing?
I had asked the folks that I was going to be staying with, because I quite literally, as a female, did not feel safe to just pick a spot by myself. So, you know, the group of folks that invited me to join them told me where they would be and that they had a friendly business who had been allowing them to stay there for some time in exchange for keeping the place clean, you know, respecting the neighborhood. And being gone basically by the time, you know, the business opened in the morning. And, you know, I'm not going to say where that was for their protection, and also to stop the blowback against that business. But I had volunteered at the community kitchen earlier in the evening. I spoke to a couple of the folks that I was going to be joining. They let me know they were headed to their sleeping spot right after dinner. So when I was done my volunteer shift, I headed over there, and a couple of them, there was four people there at the time, and a couple of them were already sleeping because there's not much else to do. And so I rolled up in my truck and I pulled out my gear and added a couple layers and a blanket and, you know, big tube, all of those things. And I got out and I kind of settled into a corner.
You mentioned that, you know, you're worried there might be a blowback if people knew that there was a business letting people kind of sleep under its awning. Can you tell me maybe about the situation in Campbell River when it comes to people living homeless, maybe in terms of number and if there's like a mood in the community?
Well, the last point in time, which is like really a snapshot, and we, you know, point in time count that the province sponsors that we did here. It's over a year old now, I think. But it identified 197 people living or precariously housed. So that could be couch surfing on the street, in a vehicle, in a shack, on a boat. We know that that is a minimum number because it's however many people we can find in 24 hours. So those of us in community on the front lines estimate that it's probably closer to 300 people. A lot of them are hidden. A lot of them don't interact with many services. They are self-sufficient in a lot of ways, particularly the people who are employed. The community, like many communities, has tended to focus on the small percentage of that population who create the most feelings of insecurity. So people with perhaps complex care needs, complex mental health issues. Yes, like any population, there are criminals who live unhoused, and those could be, you know, petty property crimes to, you know, graffiti, public nuisance to assault. But we've got those people housed as well. But because communities, because unhoused communities tend to congregate in downtown settings, because that's where services are, because that's where transit is. So it's accessible. People see those small percentage of problems, and that's what they focus on, and they create a homogeneous group that they equate to criminality, lawlessness, insecurity. And unfortunately, there isn't a week that goes by for probably the last 3 or 4 years that I don't run into somebody who is unhoused, who has been assaulted, set on fire, their belongings destroyed, their belongings stolen, their belongings burned, or they've been threatened somewhere, somehow. And so I think the stat is that an unhoused person is 7 times more likely to be a victim of violence than those of us who are housed. So the safety and security that many municipalities are focusing on are focused on a very particular part of the population. And a lot of it has to do with perception, right? I perceive I am not safe because there are people that I don't understand hanging around, and they might cause a problem for me. So therefore, I'm not going to go there, or I want them to go away. And I think that I don't think Campbell River is different or unique in any of that. As people are less and less sure about their own security, whether it's financial, employment, housing, many do look for a scapegoat or a visible target to divert. And we all tend to look for each other as opposed to our governments or the corporations or the people who've created the systems that created the problem.
This is People First Radio. Recently, Campbell Rivers' Sue Moen decided to spend the night with a group of people experiencing homelessness in the community. She's sharing her takeaways from that experience. You've pulled up to this spot under this kind of awning. You've pulled out some blankets. You're trying to get to sleep. Can you tell me a bit what that experience was like?
Well, very disconcerting to say the least. Number one, it was really hard. You don't notice that, you know, the comforts that you're used to until you don't have them. So I couldn't lay down because I couldn't carry. And I didn't want to fill my truck because that didn't seem authentic. So I couldn't carry like pillows and extra blankets and, you know, extra stuff. So, you know, although I think I had four layers of clothing on, and then a pretty fluffy, good blanket, it wasn't enough. I mean, I was immediately freezing. And I'm 65 years old and my hips hurt and my elbows hurt and my, right, like everything hurt. So I, you know, and the folks joked, but I got back in my truck and I went, okay, so this is semi-authentic because I know there's lots of people sleeping in their vehicles. And so then I spent some time like tucking myself in, getting the seat comfy, all of that kind of stuff. And then I started noticing just how different it sounded around me. You know, one of the guys, prolific snorer, took me a long time to figure out what that noise was. Like, okay, I can accept that. The traffic, because we were downtown, sounded different than my residential neighborhood. And somewhat, it felt more threatening just having vehicles of different kinds going by randomly, right? I mean, people are out about their business, but it felt more threatening. You know, one of the folks was coughing a lot. And I listened to that for a very long time, trying to qualify or quantify how serious that cough was, you know, whether she needed medical attention. And then eventually I was warm enough that I eventually did drift off and sleep for a while, fairly early in the evening, because there's nothing else to do.
Did you get a sense of the folks you were with, how they kind of navigate this situation on a nightly basis of trying to sleep?
Yeah, one of the guys, he had a couple of blankets. He was in a parka and a toque, and he just basically, cocooned himself. And he was sound asleep when I got there. The other guy had a lawn chair, and he was actually in a survival suit. And he, too, was asleep when I got there. The other people who are a couple, they had thrown a tarp over him just in case, like just to keep some more warmth in. They actually are very prepared. They've got a lot of experience outside. And they had, what did she say? She had 7 blankets underneath her. They used all their extra clothing as pillows. And then they had 2 or 3 comforters on top of themselves. So they were able to take off their shoes and their outer clothes. And then because they slept together, there was some body heat trapped in there. And they do it every single night. Occasionally they visit one of the temporary shelters, you know, to spend a couple of nights inside if there's room.
And what happens to all of those blankets during the day?
They fold them up, they put them in a shopping cart, and they take them with them wherever they go.
Was there anything that you were maybe not expecting from this experience that stuck with you?
Just the feeling of unease. Because, I know the folks, I know the streets. I know most of the people that are out there quite well over many years. But this vague sense of being a target and being uneasy about that, because and I wasn't expecting that at all. And it sort of pervaded, you know, the first, every time, the times that I woke up, that was something that kept me from going back to sleep.
When you talk about being a target there, could you maybe expand a bit on that idea?
Well, just like I said, there, you know, there have been many incidences of community vigilantism. You know, I've been a target of not threats, but bad conduct, both online and in person. You know, I'm a bleeding heart, I'm a woke, I'm whatever, when I try to present a broader picture or a more nuanced picture of the people who are actually living on our streets. But yeah, it was the, you know, like hearing a muscle car going down a couple blocks away. Like literally it was my, the first thought that came in my head was, oh, that could be dangerous. And yet in, you know, I mean, I've worked outreach on the downtown east side at 3 o'clock in the morning and I did not feel that sense of danger.
Why do you think the difference between that experience and in Campbell River?
I don't think it's particular to Campbell River. I think it is particular to the times we are living in. You know, there are so many people struggling in so many different ways. You know, we have a climate emergency. We have a housing crisis. We have a toxic drug crisis. We have, you know, health and mental health deficiencies in our systems, the cost of living and groceries and all of those things. Plus, then you expand to what's happening globally. And people are very afraid. And many people respond to fear with anger. Like they, fear comes out as anger. And anger needs a target. And I think that's just... for anybody. And so, yeah, I don't think it's particular to Campbell River or my situation. I just, yeah, I think it's very much a sign of the times that we are living in, which also then gives me some empathy for the people who lash out at our unhoused neighbors. I mean, a little bit of empathy. I understand where they may be coming from. I would just hope that we can all have conversations and get past that, so that we can work together to actually come up with solutions.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh, and my guest is Sue Moen. She's sharing reflections from a night shared with a group of people experiencing homelessness in Campbell River. It was announced this week on that front that Campbell River is going to get a village of prefabricated units for unhoused people to live in. What are your thoughts on that development?
Well, I'm ecstatic. You know, it is 40 safe, secure, warm, serviced units for some of our most vulnerable people. And, you know, I think it's going to be a challenge for the city to staff it, like, to bring community capacity together to actually provide all the promised services. Many of the agencies here and in a lot of places are already struggling for staff, but it also opens up a lot of opportunities, I think, for including the people that the village is supposed to serve in employment, in volunteerism, in services, in a lot of ways. So yeah, I'm ecstatic. It's a great start. It's a very good model. It's got a proven track record of success in other places. And I think it can demonstrate to community, the rest of the community, that there are solutions. You could look at it, it's 25% of the known unhoused from that list, right?
Are there any other solutions you think either governments or individual people could do, any other things people could do, actions they could take to make a positive impact?
I think if individual citizens, residents, and groups, community agencies, you know, along with health, municipality, if we worked together to take advantage of both the federal and the provincial incentives and changes to accelerate housing, but also to look at different kinds of housing, right? Like, you know, just things like I go for a dog walk every day, and I see so many significantly large houses on pretty large lots with two people living in it, right? Like, we are so spoiled in North America of what we consider necessary private space. I think we're going to have to rethink that. And I think an opportunity lies in, you know, utilizing some of those federal and provincial dollars for nonprofits to purchase existing buildings and housing and renovate them for multi-units, right? Like, a lot of those houses, it wouldn't take much to create four suites in them, or six suites with you know, a shared with common amenities. Now, that doesn't work for everybody. In some, you know, some people will require their own private space, but we have to look at a much longer, broader, more imaginative continuum of what it means to be housed and have a home, because it looks different. And so the cookie cutter, the mass, you know, 50 unit places, it doesn't have to be that big. Yes, we deal with a lot of numbers that way, but if we could house four people, then six people, then two people, then, right, on an ongoing continual basis, we could do this.
So you have spent one night this winter outside with a group of folks experiencing homelessness in Campbell River. What would you say to people who have never done something like that? What would you want them to know about it?
That, you know, once again, the resiliency, the courage, the humor, the strength necessary for somebody to survive outside for any length of time is phenomenal. And the stories and the history, they are, we need to know those stories. So what I would encourage people to do is, you know, like, you don't need to jump in and volunteer for, you know, 50 people or 20 people or 4 hours a week. Just say hello and acknowledge the humanity of one individual in your community, get to know their story. And I think that's how we overcome the stigma. That's how we overcome the barriers and the fear, is when we know someone. So you don't have to sleep in your car. You don't have to go hungry to have empathy and understanding. All you have to do is take the time to know one person.
Is there anything else you'd like to bring to the conversation today?
Just a huge, huge thank you to the folks that welcomed me, that encouraged me, that teased me that night. So that's Wayne and Marguerite and Stan and Travis.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about it.
Thank you, Joe, for the opportunity.
Sue Moen, sharing reflections on her experience of a night on the streets of Campbell River.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.